from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Why does this room look amazing? What'd you change?
Oh, I just got these custom shades from Blinds.com. It's all online, so it's really easy. Great price, too.
Ugh, I remember shopping for Blinds. I waited around all day just to get a quote.
Hi, sorry I'm late. I know you said just the bedroom, but what do you feel about the
bathroom?
Feel
like I had to say yes, just to get rid of her.
All right, just go ahead and sign here and we'll get everything taken care of.
It took forever, and the worst part, hidden fees. How about you?
I chatted with my Blinds.com design consultant on my time, got free samples, and it was all super high quality at a great price. Plus, they make it easy to DIY or add installation like I did.
Blinds.com sounds way better.
Way better. And everything comes with their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, check this out. I can control them from my phone.
Whoa, magic.
There's a better way. Shop Blinds.com for up to 45% off. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valenti and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Once again, good morning, and thank you for your patience. This is a significant day in the life of our diocese, and I thank all of you for being here. I always like, as all things, to begin in prayer. We should always be framed in prayer in all that we do. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. In every age, O God, you have called us to be your people, to be your church. In this time, we begin anew to discern the pathways that will lead us, your people, closer to you. Continually bless our journey as we proclaim your good news, celebrate your saving presence among us, serve others with charity and justice, and steward the world you have entrusted to our care. Send your Spirit to lead and guide our Amos journey as we commit ourselves to the renewal of our church. This we ask through Christ our Lord. Amen. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. Once again, I have a few opening remarks. I wish you a good morning and appreciate certainly that you prioritize this opportunity for us to detail the process that has guided our intense deliberations to define the future of our Diocese of Buffalo, our church here in Western New York, and the decisions we will be taking to ensure a stronger, more connected, and mutually dependent Catholic community here in our diocese. I am grateful for the considerable attention you, as the local news media, have devoted to this protracted and very difficult process that actually began well before I arrived as your bishop in 2021 of January. It has been a constant preoccupation and my responsibility ever since, one that I take very seriously. I am deeply grateful to the hundreds of individuals, lay, religious, clergy alike, who have been so invested in this process, devoting untold hours to listen, discuss, discern, and yes, to pray for the guidance of God Himself in arriving at the decisions we are announcing today. know that these were not easy to make. This process, which began more than 4 years ago, and the one that we continue, as we know, is known as the Road to Renewal. This isn't some clever marketing speak, but an expression of what must be the constant preoccupation of Christians individually and the family of faith collectively. Constantly seeking to be renewed in our faith and respond to the realities that we face, which require us to rely on one another and ultimately on our source of faith, the Lord Himself. The fact is, the Diocese of Buffalo, like dioceses across our nation and around the world, have had to deal with the very same harsh realities: the decline in church attendance, the decline of those pursuing a religious vocation to the ordained ministry, the rise of secularism and shifts away from the parish as that defining center of Catholic identity, and of course, the horrendous toll that the sexual abuse scandal by clergy and others has inflicted on parish life and the personal faith of so many, and most especially on those who have been forever harmed, body, soul, and spirit. Without question, we could spend days discussing these factors in larger societal developments and understanding how it is that we got to where we are today. But the fact is, for the diocese to fulfill the spiritual and physical needs of the Catholic faithful here in our diocese, we must face these realities squarely, without any illusion or false expectations that we have some kind of divine rescue plan. We call upon divine assistance in all that we do. It requires acknowledging that our faith is in the person of Jesus. He is the reason we do all that we do. And our Christian discipleship depends on living the gospel conspicuously and always in service to others. It has never been about maintaining properties or structures that no longer serve the needs of the Christian community or which require resources that then deprive us of the ability to care for those in need and deliver essential sacramental ministry. From the beginning, the Road to Renewal was always about reinvigorating our Catholic faith, more fully optimizing parish and diocesan resources, and increasing the impact of our varied ministries among the countless who benefit from them across Western New York. The ultimate goal is for all parish families to be and remain vibrant communities of faith, focused on their evangelizing mission and serving, always serving, those in need. I believe we have developed a blueprint that will now enable us to better fulfill that ongoing mission and work. And yet, like yourselves, as someone whose life was defined by my own parish experience as a young boy, and eventually as a priest and pastor, I share the deep disappointment that many feel about the prospect of parish church merging and closing. It is in the parish that life's most profound moments have been shared and celebrated, where traditions have been passed down generation to generation, where indeed our personal and family identities have been shaped. The parish community is a reflection of the very soul of those who belong to it. Yet, again, as bishop and pastor, as shepherd of this diocese, our diocese, My personal goal has and continues to be the renewal of our Catholic faith in this part of the world, despite the considerable challenges as we continue to face them with strength and conviction. I can say without hesitation that the greatest gift has been to engage often with parishioners, children in the schools, at confirmations, our parents, as well as those who I celebrate masses with, and the groups in our parishes around the diocese, every corner of this diocese in these eight counties, listening and learning so much and coming to appreciate the proud and intense legacy of faith that has defined our Catholic Church in Western New York, and which continues in our day and time. Believe me, I understand the pain, the sadness, but also I've experienced the joy of what it means to be a part of our church and a parishioner. Throughout this multi-year process of consultation in each of the regions, or as we call them, vicariates, I have heard their appeals, been subject to expressions of anger and hurt, and also cried, along with those who understandably feel a sense of loss in knowing that they will no longer be able to worship at the church that they call home. At the same time, I have also been encouraged and edified by so many who understand the enormous challenges of maintaining these costly churches and parish buildings with diminishing ability to sustain them or to reverse their decline. And so what we propose is a new way of defining the Catholic Church in Western New York, a new way of defining parish boundaries, and a new way of considering how best to be that true family of faith, constantly seeking renewal, forming our youth to understand and have a zeal for our call to holiness, and better able to serve the lives and souls of all of those who depend on us. I suspect you will have more questions than we probably have answers to at this time, even at this stage. We will do our best to provide as much clarity as possible about the future. Know that I have made these decisions with extensive consultation and prayer, and I am tremendously grateful to Father Brian Zelenski, who continues to serve as our vicar for the renewal, and who can also share details of the process for designating certain parishes for consolidation and closure. The process for determining the future utilization of churches and parish communities continues, and will be guided, as it is in our diocese everywhere, by canonical considerations as defined by the Holy See. Finally, I want to assure that all who belong to this local church and our Diocese of Buffalo, and all who depend on our ministries, that the decisions we will be implementing are rooted first and foremost in our ability to carry forth the gospel message of our Lord Jesus, to serve as he requires us, and to come together in a way that will allow us to clearly reveal that love, that forgiveness, and that joy that must be hallmarks of our Catholic faith. I now invite Father Brian forward here to provide further details of the parish and worship site plans that we are sharing with you today. Once again, I thank you for your concern, for your work, and all that you do in promoting and to looking out for the good of our community here in Buffalo, in Western New York. We're in this together. God bless you. Father Brian, thank you.
Thank you, Bishop Mike, and thank you for your leadership at this time in our diocese, and thank you all for being present here today. As I begin, I'm just going to begin with some general announcements and how the process took place, and then I will go through the specific each vicariate and each family of parishes sharing what the final decisions are moving forward for our diocese. We can't do any of this without acknowledging the hard work of our pastors, moderators, priests, deacons, lay leadership, and our family leadership in our parish communities, and all the work that they have put forward in helping us move these decisions forward. Since we began the right-sizing and reshaping portion of this renewal, much consultation was solicited, not just from leaders within our diocese, but also from other dioceses who have gone through this process before as well. It's important for us to know that any time a bishop looks to reshape the parishes within a diocese, there are particular processes that need to be followed, and consultation and input needs to take place following the directives of canon law. I want to assure everyone, as the vicar for renewal, that this was taken very seriously, and we made sure that the consultation that was needed took place, and the canonical procedures were followed extensively. The other dioceses that we also consulted in this process spoke of the thoroughness and well-formed process that we undertook, and the hard look at just cause for each of the situations in which we were recommending mergers and closures. So that everyone is aware, the next steps after today's announcements are as follows. In the coming week is an opportunity for our parish leaders, our priests, deacons, to meet with their communities and share with them this information. Bishop Mike will record a message that will be played at all masses this weekend for all the faithful of the Diocese of Buffalo to hear about the vision moving forward on the road to renewal. Next Tuesday, September 17th, all of our priests and lay leaders are invited to a meeting that will take place at St. Stanislaus in order for us to discuss and talk about mergers and closures that will happen. The mergers and closures that are announced today will take place between October and June 1st of 2025. We will go through next Tuesday how they will select that date, and the parishioners and leadership will be the ones to help choose that date and inform us of when that will be taking place. So we'll look at how to choose the date, what are the requirements that need to be met for them to actually merge and close. We'll talk about the new pillar work that the family of parishes needs to participate in going forward. And then we'll talk about creating a transition team for the transitions that will need to take place in these mergers and closures. A procedure manual will also be shared in what the expectations are from the Catholic Diocese for each of these parishes that are merging and closing to make sure we follow proper protocol and procedure. One extremely exciting point in which we are going forward today as well is that this is not just about mergers and closures, but the road to renewal is also about how are we looking to the future, which includes Alpha. Alpha, which we've heard talked about before, is an evangelization program that will be taking place starting in the coming week in 18 of our 36 families of parishes. This is an extremely good way for us to get the message and the good news of faith in Jesus out to our community. And the result of this work and what will be announced today is meant to help us vision for the future, and we are led by the Holy Spirit in that. I want to share with you that all of the decisions that came forward in today's announcements are from either the initial recommendation that was put forth by the Diocese of Buffalo back in June, or through collaboration with the counterproposals that came in from each family of parishes. There are two definitions I want to go through before we get into announcements as they come up as we start making these announcements. Number one is watch list. There were some parishes and secondary worship sites in these decisions that were placed on a watch list. That watch list means that that site or that parish has some specific goals that we want them to achieve in the coming year to make sure that they are viable and strong and continue to minister to the needs of the diocese going forward in their area. Secondly, is a secondary worship site. A secondary worship site is a former parish that no longer functions as a parish itself. It is merged into another parish community. The use of these facilities are determined by the family. However, they are restricted from functioning as an individual parish. Therefore, There may be less masses at a secondary site than at the primary site. All functions work through the parish where the secondary worship site is located. A secondary worship site can have weekend masses, can have daily masses, baptisms, weddings, funerals, and other sacramental celebrations. But that is determined by the pastor, parish leadership, and leadership groups where those parishes have been merged with. So I just want to clarify what a secondary worship site is. It is not a fully functioning parish, but it does function for the needs of the community in which it has now become a part of. As part of the announcements, I will go through each vicariate, and as that I will name, so we're going to begin with the Buffalo Vicariate. I will name the family, then I will name the parishes that remain open. I will then name secondary worship sites, and then I will name the parishes that are merging and closing. I will highlight in these announcements areas in which there were adaptations from the initial recommendation. So in the Buffalo Vicariate, family number 20, parishes that remain open in the family are St. Mark Buffalo. This was a change from the initial recommendation. An Assumption Buffalo with a secondary worship site of St. Margaret. Parishes merging and closing in family number 20 are St. Rose of Lima in Buffalo, All Saints Buffalo, and Holy Spirit Buffalo. In family number 21, parishes remaining open in the family are Saints Columba Brigid Buffalo. That is a change from the initial recommendation. And St. Columba Brigid will become the Hispanic Ministry Center for the Hispanic community with ministry and masses available to accommodate the growing population. Parishes also remaining open in the family include Blessed Trinity and St. Martin de Porres. There will be no secondary worship sites in family 21. Family 22, parishes that remain open in the family include Blessed Sacrament Buffalo and St. Louis Buffalo. There are no secondary worship sites. We do have an oratory in this family that will be St. Anthony of Padua, Buffalo. And an oratory meets the needs of specific communities or ministries, and that can be explained further. Parishes that will be merging and closing in family 22 are St. Michael in Buffalo. It is important to note that Our Lady of Perpetual Help, who was originally assigned to family number 22, is moving to family number 31 and will merge with Our Lady of Charity Parish and remain as a worship site. Family number 23, parishes that remain open in the family are Our Lady of Hope in Buffalo. There will be no secondary worship sites. Coronation Parish in Buffalo will merge and close, but the Vietnamese community will merge with Our Lady Help of Christians in Cheektowaga. Holy Cross in Buffalo will merge and close and will merge with Saints Columba Brigid, where the Hispanic ministry will now take its home. Family number 30, parishes open in the family are St. Stanislaus Buffalo, St. Catherine Drexel, Corpus Christi. Secondary worship sites will be St. John Gualber, Cheektowaga, St. Adalbert Buffalo. Parishes merging and closing are St. John Canty Buffalo. The adaptation in this family is St. John Gualber as a secondary worship site. Family 31, parishes open in the family, Our Lady of Charity Buffalo, St. Teresa Buffalo. Secondary worship sites will be either St. Ambrose or St. Martin of Tours, and Our Lady of Perpetual Help in Buffalo. There's an explanation as to why St. Ambrose or St. Martin of Tours, and that came from their counterproposal team, but they will have a little bit more research to do and get back to us with a decision on which one they choose for the future of their family parishes. Parishes merging and closing will include St. Thomas Aquinas Buffalo and either the other, St. Ambrose or St. Martin of Tours, whichever the family does not choose. Family number 32 decisions. Parishes open in the family are St. Andrew Sloan, Our Lady of Częstochowa, Cheektowaga, and St. Casimir Buffalo, which has been designated as a freestanding church, but must work with the family moving forward in the future. There are no secondary worship sites, and the parishes merging and closing are St. Bernard Buffalo. Family number 36, parishes open in the family are St. Joseph's University Buffalo, and this also has a secondary worship sites, as designated a little bit differently here, is the UB Newman Center in Amherst, which provides campus ministry to the UB North Campus, as well as Buffalo State University, which now has its campus ministry functioning out of Assumption Parish in family number 20. That's the Buffalo Vicariate. We'll now move to the Genesee, Wyoming Vicariate. In family number 6, parishes open in the family are Immaculate Conception East Aurora, St. Vincent de Paul Springbrook, and Annunciation in Elma. There are no secondary worship sites, but there is a chapel on the St. George property in West Falls that will remain open for private prayer. Parishes merging and closing are St. George's Parish in West Falls, and parishes moving to another family, St. Joseph's in Holland, will move to family number 33, and I will address that in family 33. Family number 12. Parishes remaining open in the family are Resurrection Parish, Batavia, Our Lady of Mercy, Leroy. Secondary worship sites being St. Padre Pio Oakfield and St. Maximilian Colby, the East Pembroke site. Parishes merging and closing are St. Padre Pio Elba site, St. Bridget in Bergen, Ascension in Batavia, and St. Maximilian Colby, the Corfu site. And family number 13, family number 13 will be merging with family number 14, so there are no remaining parishes in family 13. I'll explain that in 14. Parishes closed and merged in this family are Immaculate Heart of Mary in Darien and Bennington, and then St. John Newman Parish, Strikersville. Parishes moving to another family, St. Maximilian Colby in East Pembroke is moving to family 12, which we just heard. St. John Newman in Sheldon is moving to family number 14. St. Joachim and Anne in Attica and Varysburg are merging with St. John Newman and moving to family 14. And St. John the Baptist Alden is being moved to family number 9. In family number 14, parishes open in the family are St. Michael in Warsaw, St. John Newman in Attica. Secondary worship sites, and this is an adaptation because of the counterproposal, is Mary Immaculate in Pavilion. We also have St. John Newman, the St. Cecilia site in Sheldon, and St. John Newman, the St. Joseph site in Varysburg. Parishes merging and closing, Mary Immaculate, the East Bethany site, and St. Isidore Parish, both the Perry and Silver Spring sites. Now to our Southern Erie Vicariate. Family number 7. Parishes open in the family, Queen of Heaven in West Seneca, and St. Gabriel in Elma. Secondary worship site of 14 Holy Helpers in Gardenville. Parishes merging and closing, St. John Vianney Orchard Park, and St. John the 23rd, West Seneca. In family number 8, parishes open in the family, Resurrection in Cheektowaga, Our Lady Help of Christians, Cheektowaga. There will be no secondary worship sites. Parishes that will be merging and closing are St. Josephat, Cheektowaga, and Queen of Martyrs, Cheektowaga. Family number 9, parishes open in the family are St. Mary of the Assumption in Lancaster, St. Philip the Apostle, Cheektowaga, St. John the Baptist, Alden. Our secondary worship sites will be Our Lady of Pompeii in Lancaster, parishes merging and closing, St. Martha in Depew, and St. Mother Teresa of Calcutta, Depew. Sacred Heart in Bowmansville will be moving to family number 15. Family number 26. Parishes open in the family include Our Lady of the Sacred Heart, Orchard Park, Our Lady of Victory Basilica, Lackawanna, a secondary worship site of Queen of Angels in Lackawanna. Parishes merging and closing, St. Anthony, Lackawanna, Our Mother of Good Counsel, Blaisdell, and Our Lady of Bistrica, Lackawanna. Family number 28. Parishes open in the family include Saints Peter and Paul Hamburg and Nativity of Our Lord, Orchard Park. Secondary worship sites include St. John the Baptist, Boston, St. Mary, East Eden, St. Bernadette, Orchard Park. This was an adaptation from the initial recommendation. Family 29. Parishes open in the family, St. Mary of the Lake Hamburg, also an adaptation from the initial recommendation. St. John Paul II Lakeview, Most Precious Blood Angola. There will be no secondary worship sites. Parishes merging and closing, St. Francis of Assisi, Hamburg, St. Anthony Farnham. In our Northern Erie Vicariate, parishes open in this family, family number 15, St. Mary Swarmville, Nativity of the Blessed Virgin Mary, Harris Hill, and St. Teresa of Avila, Akron. Secondary worship sites will include Our Lady of Peace, Clarence, and Sacred Heart in Bowmansville. Family number 16. Parishes open in this family include Saints Peter and Paul Williamsville, Christ the King, Snyder, St. Leo the Great, Amherst. Secondary worship sites will be St. Benedict, Eggertsville, which is a change from the initial recommendation. Parishes merging and closing, St. Aloysius Gonzaga, Cheektowaga, and Infant of Prague, Cheektowaga. Family number 17, parishes open in this family include St. John the Baptist, Kenmore, St. Stephen, Grand Island, St. Paul, Kenmore, St. Timothy, Tonawanda. Secondary worship sites are none, and parishes merging and closing, St. Andrew Kenmore and Blessed Sacrament Tonawanda. In family number 18, parishes open in this family include St. Amelia Tonawanda, St. Christopher Tonawanda, Our Lady of Częstochowa, North Tonawanda. There are no secondary worship sites. Parishes merging and closing include St. Francis of Assisi Tonawanda. However, there will be utilization of the St. Francis Chapel with the columbarium that will remain, and there'll be an evaluation of what family ministry and outreach ministry needs to take place that could happen at the St. Francis of Assisi location in Tonawanda. And other parish merging and closing is St. Jude the Apostle in North Tonawanda. In family number 19, parishes open in the family include St. Gregory the Great Williamsville, Good Shepherd Pendleton. There are no secondary worship sites. Parishes merging and closing include St. Pius X in Gettysville and Good Shepherd, the St. Augustine site in Clarence. Our next vicariate is the Southern Tier East Vicariate. Family number 1. Parishes open in this family include Immaculate Conception Wellsville. Secondary worship sites include Holy Family of Jesus, Mary, and Joseph in Belmont, St. Jude and Alfred, and Our Lady of the Angels in Cuba. This was a change from the initial recommendation. Parishes merging and closing include St. Mary Bolivar, Blessed Sacrament Andover, St. Brendan Almond, and St. Joseph Oratory in Sile. Family number 2. Parishes open in this family include St. Patrick's in Belfast. Secondary worship sites include St. Patrick Fillmore and St. Mary in Canasarega. That was a change from the initial recommendation. In family number 24, parishes open in this family include St. Mary the Angels Basilica Olean and St. Bonaventure Allegheny. Secondary worship sites include St. John the Evangelist in Olean. Family number 25, parishes open in this family, Holy Name of Mary Ellicottville, with secondary worship sites at Our Lady of Peace Salamanca and St. Philomena Franklinville. Family number 33, parishes open in this family, St. Mary Arcade. Secondary worship sites include St. Aloysius Springville and St. Joseph's in Holland. This was a change from the initial recommendation. Parishes merging and closing, St. Jude Sardinia, St. John the Baptist West Valley, St. Mary East Arcade worship site. Our next vicariate is the Southern Tier West Vicariate. In family number 3, parishes open in this family include Our Lady of Mount Carmel, Silver Creek, and Holy Trinity in Dunkirk. Secondary worship site will be St. Elizabeth Ann Seton, Dunkirk. That was a change from the initial recommendation. Parishes merging and closing will include Our Lady of Mount Carmel, Forestville, St. Joseph, Fredonia, St. Anthony, Fredonia, and Blessed Mary Angela of Dunkirk. Family number 4, parishes remaining open in this family include St. James, Jamestown, Sacred Heart, Lakewood, and St. Patrick, Randolph. Secondary worship site being St. John's site of Holy Apostles in Jamestown. Parishes merging and closing, the Holy Apostles, St. Peter and Paul site in Jamestown, Sacred Heart, the Our Lady of the Snow site in Panama, St. James, the Our Lady of Victory site in Frewsburg, and Our Lady of Loretto, Falconer. Family 5, parishes open in this family include St. Mary of Lourdes in Mayville, St. Dominic, Westfield, Christ Our Hope in French Creek, with a secondary worship site being St. Mary of Lourdes in Bemis Point. Parishes merging and closing, St. Dominic Brockton site and Christ Our Hope, the Sherman site. In family number 27, parishes open in this family include St. John and Epiphany, Langford, and Immaculate Conception, Eden. There are no secondary worship sites, and parishes merging and closing include Holy Spirit, North Collins, and St. Mary, Cattaraugus. And our final vicariate today is the Niagara Orleans Vicariate. In family number 10, parishes open in the family include St. John the Baptist Lockport, St. Brendan on the Lake Newfane, Our Lady of the Lake Barker. A secondary worship site will include St. Brendan on the Lake, the Olcott site. It's a seasonal worship site for the summers. Parishes merging and closing are All Saints in Lockport, both their St. Patrick and St. Joseph campus, St. Brendan on the Lake, the Our Lady of the Rosary Wilson site. Parishes moving to another family are Immaculate Conception in Ransomville and moving to family 34. Family number 11, parishes open in this family include Holy Trinity Medina, St. Mary Holly, Holy Family Albion. There are no secondary worship sites. Parishes merging and closing, St. Stephen's site of Holy Trinity in Middleport, St. Mark, Kendall, and the former Lindenville property and rectory will be sold. Paris is moving to another family. Our Lady of the Lake Barker will move to family number 10. Family number 34. Parishes open in this family include St. Peter Lewiston, Immaculate Conception, Ransomville. A secondary worship site would be the St. Bernard's Worship Site of St. Peter's Parish in Youngstown. Parishes merging and closing are St. Raphael, Niagara Falls. And in family number 35, parishes open in the family are St. Vincent de Paul, Niagara Falls, Holy Family of Jesus, Mary and Joseph, Niagara Falls. Secondary worship sites would include St. Mary of the Cataract, Niagara Falls, and St. Leo, Niagara Falls. Parishes merging and closing, St. John de La Salle, Niagara Falls, and Divine Mercy of Niagara Falls. In total, when we look at our Diocese of Buffalo and where we are going, after these announcements, total number of parishes in the Diocese of Buffalo are 79. Secondary worship sites are 39, for a total number of places that people in the Diocese of Buffalo can worship at 118. This is a reduction in parishes in the Diocese of Buffalo by 51%, and a reduction in worship sites in the Diocese of Buffalo by 40%. There are continued, as I mentioned, mergers of some families. That detail has been explained to each of the families and the information that has been given to them. And those parishes that have been placed on a watch list have also been given that information in the announcements that went out last night to the respective vicariates and parish families.
At this time, I'd like to open it up to questions. As I mentioned earlier, if we could keep questions today on the subject of the road to renewal issues that Father Brian and the Bishop discussed.
Okay. Father Brian, can you explain, like in North Buffalo, what happened with turning St. Margaret's into a worship site, and what did St. Mark present that was so compelling to you to change that?
Sure. So as we know, the counterproposal teams met with the counterproposal review team of the renewal over a two-week period. Every vicariate was selected for a specific day, and each of them had roughly an hour worth of meeting. In the counterproposals that were presented to us here at the diocese, it included updated data, information, and things that we needed to know in helping craft the final decision. St. Mark's came forward with some information on the strength of the school and how things were going forward, and for that parish community, how it was integral in helping to make sure that the school was successful going forward. That information was shared with the other members of that family that were there for that counterproposal, and the representatives from St. Margaret's also acknowledged, having talked with St. Mark's, that this was a good move for both communities, and that was why it was agreed that St. Margaret's would become the secondary worship site of St. Mark's Parish. So it was in collaboration with those leaders and with us in coming up with that final decision. So St. Mark's presented the facts and what they thought was going forward. They had talked to St. Margaret's. They came to that mutual agreement. Obviously, there was some conversation between the other parishes and that family as well, but that ended up being our final decision as following the St. Mark's counterproposal.
But some of the buildings, like, say, St. Patrick's and Lockport, giant, beautiful churches. How do you secure selling these when they're not just your standard properties?
That's a challenge no matter what properties that we're looking at. You know, we have our buildings and properties department here at the diocese, and we trust that they have the right connections and people to help us really market the properties to the best of our ability and making sure that we're following proper procedures, protocols. And, you know, there are those groups that are out there that are sometimes looking for historical buildings of that nature, and we just hope that they come forward at this time.
And that's going to be my next question. If there's a group that's interested in buying something like, say, like we're saying, like St. Patrick's, how do they reach out to the diocese? Is it going to be like a realtor? How does that work?
So it follows the same process as if you were selling your home. You get your home appraised, we get our churches appraised. They come back with the value, it gets placed on the market through a realtor, and then you contact the realtor company, they go through collecting the bids, and then it's just a regular process of where the consultants will then consult on what those offers are. Does it meet the expectations of what a sale should in that area based on the appraisal, and then it's approved by the consultors, the parish family, and community leadership there, and then ultimately by the bishop.
Bishop, if you could. I know this is obviously hard for you guys. What are you feeling right now? How are you? What's going through your mind at this point, naming off all these different locations?
I appreciate you asking that question. I guess I have a mixture of emotions. One is that, as I said in the beginning, this is a turning point in the history and the life of this diocese, of our diocese. Certainly, no bishop ever wants to close. We want to build. But I also look at what is our mission. I looked at the prayer for the renewal, and there it talks about the Amos journey. And I guess I kind of feel a bit of that right now. In the Amos journey, weren't our hearts burning when we heard what the Lord had to say? And I think that's going forward. That's going to continue, and that's what gives us, I think, our focus and gives us our impetus to do what we're doing. At the same time, there's the sadness that those disciples felt about thinking they lost their best friend. These churches, as I shared, three of my churches in Baltimore have closed that I grew up in. You know, so I understand the loss when we lose a parish, when a parish closes. My heart was just, in one ways, it was elated to hear when our people would come into these meetings and share their love and sharing the legacy of their parishes. These are our families. So that part of it is sort of rips your soul. And so there's that feeling. It's a sense of sadness, but also it gives us an opportunity to now refocus who we are as Catholics and what an exciting time it is to be a Catholic. Those who remain in our parishes, I thank them for remaining and staying with us. And I invite those who have been alienated or who feel that they've been pushed aside, I welcome them back. We need them at this time. So I guess that's what's swirling in my head and keeping me from getting a good night's sleep these days.
Bishop.
Yes, sir.
Of course, closures and mergers for these parish families is going to be difficult. In your purview, is this enough to help right the ship for the overall Diocese of Buffalo?
Well, right now, what we're presenting, as we project it into the next 10 years, we hope will get us there. When we're looking at personnel, when we're looking at finances, when we're looking at people in the pews. But the ultimate answer to that really relies in the individual communities of faith and how we can, again, get them engaged and enthused about their communities. This is our way, the way. It's not a process. It's the way. It's the way of having us, again, look at ourselves in a mirror, in a sense, as a Catholic community. And, you know, we're not very good at bragging as Catholics about our faith and about what we do. But I think this is a challenge, I think, to all of our communities, those who remain open, you know, that you are to be welcoming to those who will be losing, you know, who will be merging. Be a welcoming community. Now they're a part of our family. So I don't want to be here in 5 years. I don't want to be here in 10 years. I want to be here in Buffalo, okay? But I don't want to be doing this. I want to be building. And that's what we're focused on. And I think we've got a good plan. I feel confident that what has been developed in this way forward will help us do that and give us some hope for our future.
Are those the changes that you had, you know, altered, or the initial recommendations? Was there a theme that you guys found amongst those changes, or was it really a case-by-case basis, as you kind of touched on there with St. Mark's?
Well, the theme is that there's such a legacy of faith. I think, you know, I kind of feel like here in Buffalo, we're being hit even harder with this. This is happening across the nation. But I think it hits us harder because we do have such a legacy of faith. You know, our Catholic faith means a lot. Proportionately, we have a lot of Catholics in Western New York. I think that's why there's so much attention spent on them. So what I got out of a lot of the common theme was how much love, no matter how many people may still be in the pews, how many, how much they had to continue to support or to put a roof on. They still had a deep love and a deep commitment and dedication to the parishes that, that were there and remain. So that's why this is, it's very heart-wrenching when we have to close a parish. But at the same time, are we able to expand, again, our arms, I don't want to call them boundaries, our arms around those to say, you're not alone and we're with you, we walk together.
Sort of piggyback on that, how impactful were these counter proposals? It seemed like you actually did take a lot of them into account. So how impactful were they in making these decisions and why?
Sure. Well, I would say that the counter proposals, this also stems off the last question too. You know, they dealt with issues that we said, we knew data, we knew statistics, we knew locations, but the counter proposals really filled in the lines for us and a lot of things. So when we look at, as Bishop mentioned, about some information about sites that maybe we weren't fully aware of, ministerial needs in specific families of parishes, whether it be the example of St. Mark's, something with the school that we needed to learn more about, whether it was about ministry at the St. Francis example in Tonawanda, where we're hearing about how the family needs to adapt what the initial recommendations were. We took those very seriously moving forward because it's coming from the people themselves. Now, obviously you can't make everyone happy in that counter-proposal process, and so the team, along with the bishop, had to weigh that out based on our data, based on the information, new information that was presented. How do you balance that so that the community feels heard, making sure that we've taken that into consideration, and then craft the decision from that.
Along those lines too, in those counter-proposals, not only did the individual parishes have to make a case why they should stay open, but then they had to turn around and say why another parish should close. And just like, I don't know, an allegiance to sports teams, people were very proud of the buildings and parishes they're in. And it did cause some friction as you try to save your own parish and then literally throw another one under the bus. And there have been some discussions and there were some frustrations among parishioners. Is there a plan to sort of repair the rift this has caused within the parish families?
So that's why at the beginning with the comments that I made, when I said that we needed to thank our parish leadership, I can't reiterate that enough, because the amount of work and the expectations throughout this entire process and what they had to go through was extremely taxing in a lot of ways, the one that you just expressed. But what we found is that it brought communities together in many instances to have hard conversations. We don't like hard conversations, as the bishop mentioned. But when we look at facilities, utilization of facilities, best use of resources, mission versus maintenance, and those conversations actually happen, is where the best fruit and dialogue helped us to create, I think, the best decisions going forward. And you could tell the families that took all of that extremely seriously and were a little bit further ahead than maybe the families where there were multiple counter proposals, but they didn't really talk to each other. And so then it kind of threw the ball back in our court to discern and sift all that information out. How do you repair the damage? I think the leadership that's in place is already working on that because they've had those dialogues. They've already begun those conversations. When we moved into the family parishes model, it allowed parishes to start to get to know one another before all of this took place. So leadership from all the communities are on our six pillar groups. So they already know one another. They're already working towards a common mission and goal. We call it their family action plan. And that allows them now to say, okay, I know this. I know John Smith. I know Jane Doe from Parish X that is going to be closing. I'm going to make sure that they're still feeling included. And it's going to take everybody to continue to make that happen.
There's a group fighting this, saying that if the decisions are against canon law, they're fighting it. They say they're going to appeal to the Vatican and that they have 10 days. Can you explain any of that process now, as far as this being final from the Diocese of Buffalo? What happens on that level if they fight it to the Vatican?
Sure. So, of course, every parishioner has a right, and those rights are protected by canon law. And that's why in my opening comments to my section, I stated how important it was for us to follow canon law procedures. And I can assure you from all the consultation that we've had with other dioceses, with our own canon lawyers, that we followed the procedures that were laid out for us. I'm very confident in that. But yet there is an appeal process that if parishioners feel that they weren't, those processes were not followed in some way, they can follow that appeal process. And that's what you're hearing about. But at the same time, these are final decisions. What begins that official appeal process is called a decree. So once parishes that are merging and closing determine the date in which that will happen, they will submit that date to the diocese, and the bishop produces a decree that says that on this date the merger will take place. Once the decree is made, that notice will be put in the parish bulletins to let people know what the official date is and that the decree has been received, and then there's a 10-day window that those appeals can be filed.
Can those parishes stay open during, if they're appealing to the Vatican?
So during that appeal process, they remain as is, functioning, going through that appeal.
Do you have an idea of how many parishes plan to appeal to the Vatican?
That's all speculation right now. I don't have just from different things that I hear, some that I know are concerned it was going to be dependent on how they took these final decisions.
Bishop, would you suspend the decree while the appeal process runs its course?
No. We continue to move forward. At the same time, I think we, as was said, canonically it stays open, and we just have to see the process through. And we'll certainly respect what the Holy See would present back to us.
What happens to employees of different parishes if their parish is closing or merging or becoming a worship site? What do those employees do? Will they be utilized in other ways in other churches?
So it's the same conversations that happen when we put our parishes into families of parishes. You know, we have our administration pillar, and the leadership in our families had conversations with employees to see where they were best suited in the needs for the family moving forward. We're expecting those same conversations to happen now. So we want to make sure that conversations are had with those employees, if there's positions for them going forward, that obviously that they're considered for those positions, and if not, there's an honest conversation that's had about that, and you know, they're journeyed with throughout that process.
How many churches are on the watch list?
How many churches are on the watch list? Give me one second. Right around 13.
Father Brian, could you clarify the number of churches and worship sites that will close now as compared with the initial recommendation? So the initial recommendation of the total was 89 sites in terms of buildings. Mm-hmm. What is the number now?
So when we had the press conference back in end of May, we were talking about we made the initial presentation of what we thought numbers should be for the diocese going forward as far as reduction in number of parishes and worship sites. After the meeting that we had with all of the priests, the deacons, and from what we were talking to in our, some of our families of parishes, there was a general statement that if we're doing this, let's make sure we're doing this for a long enough period of time that we're not going through this process in another 2 years, 3 years, but let's try to aim for a longer goal. So when that was brought to our attention, that's why the initial recommendations were much more drastic than what we initially intended. But it was in consultation with all of those other bodies of leadership, and that's why we came up with the decisions that we have today. So when we're going from the 160 parishes down to 79 parishes, and it was 36 secondary worship sites before, we now have 39 worship sites. So we're going from 196 total places within the diocese to worship between parishes and secondary worship sites down to 118.
What about the parishes that have like schools? What happens to the schools? Where do the students go? The schools that are active?
I can take this. That was very much a part of my consideration and discernment when our proposals and counter proposals were coming in. As I have stated from the beginning of coming here again as your bishop, Catholic education in schools are vital to the mission of this diocese. And we're doing all that we can to preserve them and to strengthen them, to give them vitality. We have a group of wonderful, dedicated people who are putting together a strategic plan for our schools, and that will, we hope to unroll that in the fall. That we hope will sink into what we're doing. But we tried to accommodate, I think we have one exception to that, but most of the schools, the reason why we made some accommodations, and you can probably tell which ones, was because of the schools there, and we want to make sure that they're stable and that the parents know that they're there to stay, and that we don't want to close schools. But we are confronted not only with trying to develop this overall plan like we're doing for the parishes moving forward with Catholic education, but at the same time, we're dealing with sometimes crisis in when you have a school that just don't have enough children in the seats or enough finances. Sometimes faculty plays a role in that. Or we may have too many schools in one area, and we're looking at those kinds of things. What are the new kind of forms of education and Catholic education do we need to look at where you may have too many schools? I mean, we may have like three schools within 4 miles of each other, and in those schools you have plenty of room for more students, but they're struggling to, each one of them is still struggling to stay open or to I guess, be more robust and vital because they don't have enough students. So, you know, they're competing, unfortunately, with one another, and we want to avoid that. And now I think the family of parishes, my hope is that they wrap their arms. I think the good part of this is that they wrap their arms around these schools that are within their families and to support them.
Do you find that a Catholic education keeps somebody as an adult in the church, active in the church?
Well, it depends on the individual, but I can say there's nothing like a Catholic education. I mean, what I get whenever I meet someone, you many of you probably have benefited from a Catholic education, the way you think, the way you make decisions, the way you live your life. You know, I think that's the purpose, is not just to give them a good academic, but to form them as good Christians and good people of God. When you meet someone who's gone to a Catholic school, I think there's also a sense of giving back in their hearts, which sometimes you don't see. Not that that doesn't happen in other places, but I think that's a hallmark of certainly our Catholic faith. We have a good story to tell about our Catholic schools, and again, one that we're not sometimes very good about.
We're hearing that some of the schools are being asked to buy their buildings from the diocese, and clearly, you know, affordability for them would be pretty rough. Mm-hmm. Can you confirm that?
I cannot comment on that because that's in the conversations that we're having about, you know, but I mean, everything is certainly, we're looking at every ways that we can strengthen those schools in one way or another. Where we'll go, I don't know.
Yeah. We've gotten emails and some calls at the station about whether the decisions, some of them were based more on the location and marketability of a site. Specifically, someone emailed us about the St. Jude site on Niagara Falls Boulevard. A newer, more modern building with lots of parking, but now you have to go to Our Lady of Częstochowa, a small or a big, old, tougher to maintain building with almost no parking. How did that factor in?
Well, certainly location was a factor, but also how do we strengthen those communities within that parish family? So those were very difficult decisions. And we had to look at them, you know, very closely. You know, that location, finances, I always look at the sacramental life of the particular place. How many baptisms have we had? How many confirmations? How many First Eucharists? So that is my first question. And then we take a look at, obviously, the finances and how does that affect the overall family of parishes that we're finding? I don't know, Father Brian, if you have any further to add to that.
Yeah, and I just want to say, you know, some of our families of parishes obviously are located in a more populous area, and so therefore when we're looking at the future, we recognize that something has to change. So we looked at multiple variables, and that variable about salability, it was something that we not necessarily considered highly, but it was considered in the process. And so we need to make sure, based on locations, sacraments, ministry, number of people in the population, do we need the number of locations we have? And that was how we kind of came up with those decisions in those more suburban settings.
Are there restrictions on these buildings when someone buys them, a bar, a nightclub, a restaurant, or even just bulldozing them?
Right. So there are covenant restrictions that we have, because when you look at the legacy of these parish buildings, you know, it's the hard work and legacy of people that have come before us that have made these sacred places. And they will always carry that with them, no matter if it turns into something different or not when it's closed and sold. And so by canon law, there are requirements that we have to ensure that this is not going to be used in a degrading way from that legacy in which they were built.
What about selling to a Muslim faith for a mosque? I mean, is there going to be any restrictions on that in the future?
So there's all sorts of canon law that needs to be followed to make sure. And so we're open to all offers. We're open to all possibilities, but we have to make sure that we're following the guidelines of canon law as we're looking at each offer that comes before us. But nothing's being restricted as far as what could possibly be used each location for in those sales.
Can you just clarify that reduction percentage? Did you say 51%?
Of parishes. Right. So a better number to follow is the worship sites. Total number of places for people to worship, we're going down 41%. Okay?
Thank you.
Yep.
I know in the past, sort of emphasized that the diocese would probably be in this spot regardless of whether there was a Chapter 11 bankruptcy, but I just want to ask the question of, to what degree is Chapter 11 impacting all of this?
Well, I think when you look at when the renewal came out and the initial comment, and I've seen this posted a couple of times, so I'll state it to you. When we first started the renewal, the comment was said this was not about closing parishes. And when we began this reshaping, restructuring, I apologized to all parish leadership that that was a statement that we should not have said. Because the process was all about the families of parishes identifying themselves properties that might not need to be used in the future. We were hoping it was going to be a little bit more ground up and have a little bit more time to do that based on all the guidelines that we started the renewal with. Essentially, and Bishop and I have talked about this, we were going to be doing this whether there was Chapter 11 or there was not. What Chapter 11 has done, the only influence it has, is kind of sped things up a little bit, because we have to take a look at where our parishes are at and what's reasonable for them going forward. So it was happening anyways, but it's sped the train up.
Bishop, as you're considered the shepherd of the diocese, because I think some people that have a problem associating you as a shepherd and the gospel story where Jesus goes after the one lost sheep, leaves the 99. When you look at this process, and the process has lost, I don't know if you have a number, how many sheep? So spiritually, how do you rectify that or can explain that to people where you've got a process here where you're losing people left and right, mm-hmm. and it doesn't jive what they read about or hear about on Sunday?
No, and I appreciate that question. Again, that's something that we're constantly praying about and discerning. I hate the word process. Like I said, I like to think of this as a way forward. You know, I spent 3-4 days this summer down in Indianapolis, where thousands of our brothers and sisters, Catholics from around the nation, came together to celebrate the Eucharist, to be together as family. It was such a joy to be with Catholics who are on fire about their faith, who really want to go back to their parishes and to share what they experienced there. That was my hope, and that's what we hope to do. I realize this is like ripping us apart, but this is more being moving forward as we define who we are now. That's why I said in the beginning, this is really a defining point in our church. And I don't think we're the only ones going through it. As I said, I think all of our bishops, all of our dioceses are struggling with that same thing. One of the goals that I had coming here was to be a healer. You know, certainly to be a healer to those who have been harmed in the abuse crisis, but also to be a healer of our diocese. And part of that is, again, how do we reconnect with our faith? How are we proud who we are as Catholics and what we represent? It's getting back to basics. I think that comes out of my responsibility as a bishop to teach. You know, there's three qualities of a bishop: to teach, to sanctify. That's what we do in the sacraments. And again, I think the sacrament that's most special to me next to the Holy Eucharist is confirmation. I love confirmations. It gives me a chance to connect with our youth, hopefully drawing them back. And that's where we're going to find a lot of healing, as well as governing. Governing sometimes is probably one of the more difficult ones. But I think we need to be welcoming and opening to those that feel they've been alienated from the church and welcome them back. I can't do that alone. As I said in the beginning, that's going to depend on each of our communities moving forward and how they welcome others. How are you a welcoming community? That's where the healing will take place.
There was no retention program through this process, and is there a process to try to regain or retain those that have gone to other denominations or stopped going altogether?
Right. So as part of that, the pillar work in our families of parishes, there's six pillars, one of them being outreach and inreach. And the whole point of that work of that pillar group and those leaders is to how do we make sure that we are reaching, number one, the larger community around us, but the inreach component is how do we minister to those within our parish walls and those that might be joining us? How do we make sure that we're acknowledging their ministries, their gifts, we're including them? We're going to be encouraging on Tuesday in that manual that will be coming out specific activities to make sure that they reach out to parishioners so that from merging and closing parishes so they don't feel lost in the process. And we'll give some guidelines on what we're expecting and hoping for that to happen. You know, when it comes to evangelization, I mentioned before, Alpha is beginning. We realize this cannot be just a one-footed approach of, you know, consolidations, mergers, and closures, but we've also got to go out there and proclaim the good news. As Bishop keeps saying, we have something special in our church, and the Holy Spirit is guiding us, and we've got to be willing to proclaim that. And so Alpha helps us to have those basic dialogues about why is faith important, particularly in today's day and age and culture. Sometimes it's hard to engage in those conversations. That's a specific program and a way to help us offer that within our own diocese.
Some people have said, though, that the Alpha program is not a Catholic, it's a Christian program, and it's really something online rather than at the parish level.
That's a great question. You know, I was exposed to Alpha as a pastor more than 20 years ago, and I saw what it did for a nearby parish. I was in the Washington Diocese. This occurred in the Baltimore Diocese, and they invited us down. They had welcomed back thousands of people to engage again. And what it does, it really gets to the heart. There's nothing. It's Christian. It's as Christians, as Catholics, we too are called to develop a personal relationship with the Lord. And that's what Alpha does. And then my criticism at that time was that, well, okay, where's the community of faith? Where's the Eucharist in this? And Alpha has addressed that. And now it is certainly, they have put components into Alpha that also help us to see our Catholic faith through the Eucharist, through the sacrament, the sacramental life of our community. So it has addressed that in those 20 years.
So you think you've successfully given parishioners enough, I guess, time to absorb this and to, I mean, get their reactions, to get, you know, give them a chance to appeal? How do you think parishioners are going to react to this now?
Well, that's why laying out the timeline and the process that took place, I believe as part of your media packet was a timeline from the beginning of the renewal to today, and then going forward, of course, they have an entire year between October and June to work on the merger closure process. And I have to share with you that many parish communities and families that came for the counter proposal process were very much in favor of what's going on and that we need to be responsible stewards and let's just keep moving forward. They were very hope-filled. Yes, these are difficult announcements, but in the midst of all this, the Spirit is working, and there's a spirit of hope, a spirit of new life, a spirit of let's get back to the basics of Alpha. Let's get back to inviting people to a relationship with Jesus. Let's introduce them to the tenets of our faith. Let's help them to understand why we're excited to keep going forward. And then if we have resources to focus on mission and not have to worry about the maintenance of buildings, it gives them more potential to do more program outreach, to maybe focus more on youth and young adult ministries. There's more potential when we're not spending our resources on the maintenance of buildings.
Do you have an idea of how many counter proposals there were and how many you accepted?
So there were 52 counter proposals that came forward in the process. In those 36 families of parishes, 26 were modified in one way or another. Some were full acceptance of a counter proposal. Some were influenced the final decisions that came forward, but 26 initial recommendations were adapted because of the counter-proposal process.
And some people have said that if they submitted a counter-proposal, as he said, not I said, you throw somebody else under the bus. There are people who said that if they appeal to the Vatican, that the Vatican won't hear their appeal because they've thrown somebody else under the bus in their counter-proposal.
I'm not aware of the Vatican not hearing the appeal because of that component of that. Remember, our goal was to get to this number of worship sites that we have, 118. So the point was is that if every parish came back to us and said, keep us open, that's not looking at the long-term goal of where we were trying to be for the best use of our resources. So that was a reasonable expectation to put out there, suggest to us something else that would close. Maybe we missed something. Maybe this site is better than another because of one reason or another. That doesn't mean everybody's going to agree on that, but can you come to a consensus on how we need to best move forward?
Can I just comment on that a little bit? I understand that you don't want to pit one group against another, particularly one parish against another. That's so difficult. But what's the alternative? Could I have come in and just given a list, all these close, without any consultation? To me, consultation, as I said, is important. Communication is important. Sometimes we're not good at as best at that as we should be. But consultation, and even there, you can only consult so much, and then you finally have to stop cutting bait and go fishing. Yeah, and I wanted to get a sense of these communities and where they were at. Again, these were not easy conversations. And those that didn't want to pit or didn't want to submit, again, a counter proposal to that, didn't. And so they leave it in my hands to do. I had to make that final decision based on all the conversations between the family of parishes that came in and then ultimately with the pastors. I can tell you we had a very robust conversation with all of our pastors. Those were even more agonizing, I think, than with some of the families, and because they love their people and they love their parishes. So, I understand that's, is it fair? Probably not. But what's the alternative? I needed to hear their voice, and they're the ones there on the ground. They know, again, what they have in terms of their resources and can provide me, again, with hopefully the best the best data, the best knowledge, that I can make a discerning decision.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
And a minimal salary cap hit. Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.